A 72-year-old man, George Bell, was found dead in his New York City apartment days before anybody noticed. He had no living family. He bequeathed his roughly $500,000 in assets to people he hadn't spoken to in years. Perhaps least surprising for New Yorkers was that Bell's 10-year-old Toyota RAV4 had just over 3,000 miles on it. Here were some of the comments in the New York Times after his profile. "I found this story exploitive and sensationalist," Rebecca commented. "It is my biggest fear to die like this," John wrote. "Dying alone reminds me of those chilling last phone calls from the summit of Mount Everest in the disaster of 1996. These are among the last words of climber Bruce Harrod."
"I'm on top of the world, mate, Kevin."
Being alone is a scary prospect, but it is also peaceful. And Pam wrote, "In death, George Bell's life found purpose to bring us face to face with our fears of loneliness or to celebrate our solitude." Eric Kleinenberg is a professor of sociology at New York University and author of Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. He says the ancient terror of solitude is softened by the many ways we can still be connected.
"Well, I think it strikes at some terror that many people have, a terror of being on their own. Living alone used to be unheard of. In 1950, less than 10% of American households were one-person households. Today, it's nearly 30% of all households at the national level, and about half of all Americans are single or unmarried. So it's a very big group. It includes people who have decided to not settle for a person they don't really want to love and have gone into their 30s or 40s without coupling up. It includes legions of people who have been in relationships and divorced or separated, and it includes large numbers of older people who have become widows or widowers."
Is loneliness a pejorative?
I think it has become a pejorative. I mean, the feeling of loneliness is something that's quite common, even for very healthy people. That feeling of loneliness is your body's signal that you need to get out into the world and seek out connection, companionship. Loneliness as a state of being is a very hard and difficult thing. But I think the issue here is that we often project loneliness onto people who live alone, even when we don't know whether or not they really are lonely.
What do you make of the story of George Bell in the New York Times? Is he a case that is not something we should be surprised about?
Well, we shouldn't be surprised because it has been happening, this case of people who live alone and also die alone. It's been happening for some time now. I've done a lot of research on these offices of the public administrator that seek out cases where people have died and no one comes to claim the body or the estate, and they have to make sense of whether there's next of kin and what to do with the body. It is sad that it happens like this, but at the same time, we don't really know whether George was truly lonely or sad himself. We don't know whether he was living alone because he really wanted to or because he had no other options. And so we tend to project our own anxieties onto cases like this. I guess when we're trying to understand a life, we really need to know much, much more before we can make those kinds of judgments.
Suspending judgment for a moment, I mean, is it conceivable that George Bell was quite at peace sitting in his Barca lounger, in front of the television, feeling himself slip away?
I think it is. In fact, I can say from the reporting I did for Going Solo, this book about the fact that there's so many people living alone in the world today, I found many people who said that they preferred living alone to other options. Some who preferred living alone and did not have a great appetite for companionship. It's a small number in the population, but it's large enough to produce the need for offices that manage cases like this. I think the issue is that we don't really know what the people in that situation want unless we ask while they're alive. Once they're dead, it's very difficult to tell.
And that's the irony here, is that there's so much focus on the, oh my gosh, 3 or 4 or 5 days that body stayed in there and nobody came. But what's fascinating to me is the hour before he died. We have this romantic notion of, you're in a hospice or in an intensive care unit and you're surrounded by family and friends with all these tubes in you. And to me, that is an absolute nightmare. I mean, everything, the tubes, the family, the whole thing, it's just horrible. What can we conclude about those last hours of someone like George Beall?
You know, I actually investigated a case of a woman who died alone in Los Angeles not long ago in very similar circumstances. And I spoke to two different neighbors. And one of them said that she seemed like she lived a very happy life and that she was content up until the end. That's just how she was. And the other neighbor said this was the saddest thing, and he felt terrible about himself, about the whole situation. So I don't know what we can conclude except for that we should be cautious to not put ourselves and our own opinions and views into these situations, because people prefer to live in different kinds of ways. I think we should focus on how the person lived as well as on the nature of the death.
I mean, there's a sense of zen there that he's just sort of quietly saying goodbye that comes into play. Maybe that's another projection.
I think it's entirely possible that he died the way that he wanted to and in a way that reflected the way he preferred to live. At the same time, I know of other cases where people die alone because they've been abandoned or because they've failed to make the connections that they need. For instance, you know, we live in a time when there's real issues with mental illness that keep people from establishing the relationships they want, or problems in city agencies that can't provide the home services to older people that they would like to get. So there are both kinds of cases out there. For me, what's powerful is to note that we are living and also dying in different ways these days. We have never before had so many people living alone, aging alone, and dying alone. I still think we're just beginning to figure out what to make of all that.
I'm wondering if your family got a little nervous when you decided to publish this book, Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. Did it deliver a message to them? Hey, Eric, you want to talk about something?
She sometimes jokes it's my fantasy book. But look, you know, I'm married. I have two young children, and I spend a lot of time in the schoolyard with other parents, and they tell me, you know, that we're at a stage of life where the idea of having more time to yourself, more solitude, is pretty enticing. It's a full court press all the time when you're in domestic family life. And so I think people have different kinds of needs. And on the one hand, we spend so much of our lives hyper-connected. We have these digital devices we carry everywhere we go and are constantly in communication. But on the other hand, more and more of us are living alone, are working independently. And so we have needs for both of those things.
Eric Kleinenberg is a professor of sociology at New York University and author of Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. Eric, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The name of the story in the New York Times was The Lonely Death of George Beall. He died alone just as he had lived for decades. In 1950, 10% of American households were one-person households, but today it's nearly 30%. So, question, do you live alone or know someone who does? Is it time to think differently about this idea of loneliness? From Austin, Texas, I learned the first time I lived alone in my mid-20s the very powerful difference between being alone and being lonely. It was a good time for learning to be emotionally self-sufficient.
Hi, I'm Joan Wiff. I live in Illinois. I live alone. I grew up in a large family, and I went to school, then I got married. I lived alone for the first time at age 42 when my husband died. And I've had a few people live with me since then, like my sister or my mother, but I've become used to the quiet and setting my own schedule. Now I don't think I could live with someone again.
And for a lot of people who responded to this question, it was about their experience.
My name is Dave Atwater. I'm calling from southern New Jersey. Living alone and being lonely are very different things. At my age, 66, I value my privacy and I'm not lonely, though I live alone. I realize that may change as I age. I don't look forward to being unable to care for myself, but I'm enjoying life.
Well, Barry, you should get in your car and drive north there in Michigan, and it'll get real quiet real quick. Maybe we could take the trip together. I've got a house full of kids, so I don't know what silence is at all. From Collinsville, Illinois, my fiancé recently passed away, and I suddenly find myself living alone. Some people are apparently worried that I won't move on and will torture myself with loneliness. I'm grateful for their concern, but I'm very okay with living alone in this circumstance. I feel the most at peace when I'm in our home, and I'd rather not share it just yet. Solitude isn't what makes me feel lonely.
This is Catherine in Dallas, Texas, and I've lived alone for 13 years since my divorce. I get lonely when I think about not having a partner to share holidays and special times with, but I've become so good at being alone, I'm almost afraid to try being half of a couple again.
Hi, my name's Dawn, and I'm calling from West Palm Beach, Florida. I live alone. I've lived alone for years, and I actually prefer it and like it a lot. I don't feel lonely. I have a lot of interaction with people all day, every day out in my job, and I like coming home to my house and having my alone time in my home.
All right, Dawn, and here's Rome, Georgia. I pretty much lived alone by choice for 18 years before remarrying this past spring. I love him, and I'm glad I made the choice, but good gosh, it can be difficult. I miss my space, solitude, and eating whatever for dinner and catching crap TV without the guilt, knowing someone else may be judging my guilty pleasures.
Hi, this is Kathy, and I'm calling from Dallas, Texas. Absolutely, we need to think differently about being alone. I live alone, and I've found that the worst sort of loneliness is when I'm in a relationship with someone. Loneliness is part of the human condition.
And that sort of analytical approach was taken by one of you in Olympia, Washington. I think humans are designed to live in clans, tribes, communities. I notice my farm animals are always more healthy when they are in a herd or a flock, and suspect we would all do better to live the challenges and benefits of more communal living. So think about that extended family from Olympia, Washington. Your take, your story at 877-8MY-TAKE. Send us a tweet at The Takeaway, and you can ask me anything on Twitter every day. I take your questions and complaints, do my best to get back to you personally. Tweet me your questions at Jay Hockenberry.